weeks, hasn't it, Judy?
Yes, it has. And it's the highlight of my life at this point. And that's not saying much.
you know,
and doing this. I mean, it's like I feel somewhat alive, but the rest of the time, it's pretty hard.
You know, it's interesting. I actually walk very close to where you live today. And I was
really
over by the Far City stuff. You know, the little park, whatever. And there's a guy there, you know, I just go, hey, how you doing, buddy, right? You know, because I do that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, next thing you know, we're like talking about how, man, doesn't this year suck? And it was like, that conversation has been repeated now thousands of times over.
Were you both masked?
We were both masked. And we're just basically saying, you know, it's like we're just, everybody's just struggling through.
I know.
We've sort of acclimated, but we hate it. And, you know.
It's like, I look back on my calendar that I have, my wall calendar, and I used to be counting the days in April. Like I'd mark it off like 5, 10. And then I stopped because I realized this wasn't going to end. So forget it. It's September 1st, Robert.
You know, I remember actually, since you mentioned the early days of this, where. As I was looking forward to it, they were saying, oh my God, things are going to peak. They're going to be horrible mid-April and whatever. And it's kind of how it worked out. The experts, the epidemiologists seem to know what
the peaks
talking
would
about.
Be April, beginning of May. Yeah.
Yeah. And we
at
did
least around horrible. Here, around
yeah.
here.
Yeah. And the thing is it, you know, and I was neurotic as hell. I'm far less neurotic about things now.
Right. You didn't go anywhere. I mean, you were.
No,
really
I wouldn't. Sheltered. Oh, I wouldn't. Yeah. I put on rubber gloves just to walk
in
the
stairwell. I only do that when I go into a store like CVS or where I'm touching things. I put on not rubber gloves, but those clear things, whatever.
Yeah, actually, one of the kind of funny things, I think I mentioned this to you yesterday or something, was that I actually had to go to the Inman Square Hardware to pick up.
Oh, I saw that.
And I just reached in my pocket and I gave the guy $1.40 for these four little set screws.
Exactly.
I realized. Wow, this is the first time I've actually used cash in 5 months.
Wow.
You know, I thought that's an unexpected twist. I would never have planned on that.
They prefer exact change if you are going to use cash.
Yeah. You just minimize handling to whatever degree possible. It's really true. So.
Although, you know what I read in the post office, it said it was because the federal, whoever makes coins, had a shortage. That's news to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I've heard that.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite make sense to me because, hey, the truth is to make a quarter, it costs you probably 5 cents to make a quarter. If you just lots of them, they'll make money. They'll balance the federal budget on quarters.
Right. Before we get to the national, which does involve, and it is primary day, people haven't voted, they have another 2 hours, right? If they're watching as we speak. But remember we talked about last time, I said I hadn't gotten my ballot, and you knew from an inside source that it was actually stuffed on a Friday, and I went to track my ballot today because I dropped it off last week in the mail, by the Election Commission. It said it was mailed on August 15th, which is a Friday.
Mailed to you.
Right. From Assume Cambridge, because it was the Election Commission. Do you know when I got it? The 21st.
Yeah.
There's definitely problems with the post office that are not them particularly, but I'm wondering if there's been a sort of subtle slowdown, even by postal employees, just to say, look, this is hurting us, all these changes.
I don't really think so, but I think.
Five days, though, from Cambridge to Cambridge?
Mine took 7, and I think
from Cambridge to Cambridge.
Yeah. And that's I've heard similar stories. I've actually been looking at this the primary day experience here.
Yeah,
and I think I don't know because I haven't asked them about this, but I think people at the Election Commission probably are seeing this to some degree as kind of a test.
Yeah.
Because the thing is that if they, you know, to whatever degree they get through the process for this iteration of an election here,
right,
when come November, when the voter turnout will be much higher, presumably. Yeah. I mean I've heard good things that the turnout when you add in mail-in early voting, etc.,
is better,
is actually much better than a typical September election.
Right.
But the November election is always, that's the prize winner in terms of voter turnout. A federal election, presidential election, is really where that's the high bar.
Right.
And the voter registration lists are always at their maximum immediately following that, because that's when everybody registers and they get maximum, right? But the thing is that, you know, if there, I think everybody expected there were going to be some bugs in the process. And I'm not just talking about the United States Postal Service, but just the lateness of the deadlines, everything was sort of a little on the made up on the fly. I think it has to be better for the November election in terms of deadlines and processing here. So I see this all as sort of a bit of a practice run. And, you know, so if they can figure out what didn't work and what did work and how they can improve certain things.
But didn't
that, that goes for the Postal Service as well.
But didn't you say that August 26th deadline to just...
Far too late.
The ballot was far too late. I'm wondering what happened to those. I mean, if it took that long, you could put in for an application and mine took so long to get and then to get back. Come on.
Yeah, no. And, you know, I think they're going to still have some craziness here because there are some people who gave up and who...
Well, you could go vote. If you didn't get it,
right,
you could still vote. And people have to, I hope they really emphasize that. They started to emphasize that because people didn't say, oh, wait a minute, if I request it, does that mean I have to use it? No, it's only if you can't do it twice. You just can't.
Hopefully their tracking works well so that
somebody
may well have dropped something in the mail and then said, I don't think it's going to get there in time. So then they actually went to vote. And in which case,
I bet that's going to happen.
It's basically it's first strike. So
one will cancel the other, hopefully.
If you voted, then you will have been recorded as having already voted. And
or
then
vice versa, if the mail ballot came in first.
Exactly. So hopefully that system works well. I'm not 100%
solid
on technological dependence here, you know. And so I hope it works. And if it doesn't work, if, you know, it's a relatively, at least for us here in Cambridge, a relatively inconsequential election, unless you're Joe Kennedy versus Markey.
Joe Kennedy versus, but also the 4th district with...
which is not us, but the thing is elsewhere in Massachusetts.
Which is not ranked choice voting, unfortunately.
No,
so that's going to be a problem. Be very interesting to see that one.
Actually, since you mentioned that, you know, since it's sort of getting national because this is a United States...
And it's on the ballot, right? It's on the ballot.
Yeah, so if you... Yeah, well, it will be on the ballot for November, ranked choice voting. I guess it's an initiative petition. I guess I always get a little confused. Referendum, initiative petition.
No, so it doesn't going to count? It's not going to count?
No, initiative petition means it's not an advisory thing like a referendum. It would be law.
It would count. It would be like the marijuana vote, the cannabis vote.
Yes, absolutely. Anyway, the thing about it is we don't have ranked choice voting now, and the 4th congressional district has 9, count them, let's see.
I know. is it 9? It used to be.
9, it's
that.
Not.
You're right.
There are 9 candidates for the seat, 2 of whom have formally dropped out and said, please, everybody vote for Jesse Murrell, right?
Oh, 2 now, because last time 2. It was just 1.
It was 2. And but the thing is that there were 4 or 5 who were kind of had some sort of numbers, at least in excess of 10%. And quite a few people have noted now that this could be one of those elections where somebody could actually win the primary with maybe 20% of the vote.
I know, that's not good.
It's hardly a mandate. And it really, for the ranked choice voting people, they will have this example to use.
Exactly.
In order to make the case for ranked choice voting. So in a sense, maybe it'll work out for the best. You know, I don't know.
Well, wouldn't there have to be a runoff if it's a certain percentage between the top 2?
No. The thing is that in some states, that's kind of the rule. In a lot of the southern states, if you don't achieve a majority of the ballots in the first round, you have to go to a head-to-head runoff.
Yeah.
My understanding, though, is that, and that sounds so progressive and et cetera, right? You know, like, well, why can't we do it that way? Well, then I also found out that the reason they did it that way is it goes back a century, and this was one way to make sure that Black representation didn't win, too. If you split a vote, you might end up with a minority elected in some of those southern states. They didn't want that, but if they said, okay, we're just going to make it a head-to-head, then they thought, oh, now we'll be guaranteed to win it. So So it's a better system than nothing, but it was born out of the worst of reasons, really. So, we don't do elections very well in this country. I mean,
the Electoral College, was that born out of the worst reasons too?
Yes, it was. Absolutely, it was.
I think I said this to you in an email. That's not going to change in my lifetime. And I think that person that's president now could win again because of Electoral College.
That's absolutely true.
And that's scary as hell to me.
It is a scary thing. But as some people have pointed out, this original sin, this one of our original sins that led to the Electoral College, at the time, it was not so much a choice between Electoral College or popular vote so much it was against for a compromise that would actually enable a union to be formed versus not. Huh. So that it was a terrible choice, but that was the better choice at the time. So the difficulty is that I don't think we want to have a system where constitutional amendments can be just sort of done at the drop of a hat. I kind of like the difficulty, but it's so difficult. And for something like this, where there's a strategic advantage for certain states to retain a bad system, it's almost impossible to change it.
Is that all it would take, is an amendment to the Constitution?
Yeah, you do a constitutional amendment to do it, but the problem is you have to get 3/4 of the states and trying to get that.
What amendment gave us the Electoral College? I have my little book.
Electoral College was part of the original. It's right baked into the Constitution.
It's in the Constitution.
Yeah. I mean, they did a few minor changes of the way we did elections in the early days. Like in the very first elections, the person who got the most votes was president. The person with the second most votes became vice president. So you actually had people from opposite parties. So
I like that idea.
I actually find it appealing in a funny way, too.
I think we should have a bipartisan administration. I really do.
I agree that I think if there could be sort of a unity party, it may come to that in 4 years. I had sort of wished it would happen this year, but maybe things are, I hope things work out well in November, but the thing is, if they don't, there may very well be reasonable discussion about trying to find some sort of good solution like that. I don't know how you get there, because trying to, everybody's sort of entrenched into their positions now, and trying to think a completely third way, in terms of a unity slate, candidates from multiple parties or whatever, because you need to do it. It's a real uphill battle to get people to really rethink that way, because it's almost military right now. It's sort of like, my side is right, your side.
The problem is that Trump has become, as everyone has said, the Republican Party. They have to get rid of him to reestablish what the Republican Party in its best values could be. And I'm not a Republican, but there's some good Republicans out there. It's not like I think they're all bad. It's just that right now there is no Republican Party. It's the Trump Party.
We have had times in American history, but not for over a century, or really almost a century and a half. We had serious third parties and parties. The Democratic Republicans, became the Democrats. Yeah. The Whigs are no more. The Federalists are no more. Yeah. So the thing is, there was some fluidity in the way parties were formed and changed. And the Republican Party was actually formed, I think Charles Sumner from around here was one of the people who were pivotal in the formation of the Republican Party back as sort of when they were largely identified as the anti-slavery party, in those days. But we kind of got locked in, for better or worse, into two parties. And now third parties tend to be just sort of these little flickering flames, like Ross Perot's Reform Party, that come and go.
Right.
If you really, really stop and think about what the political landscape is right now, at least at a national level, is really like at least four clear entities. There's a crazy radical right, and there's traditional Republicans who are now just almost invisible.
Right.
And then there's what we might think of as liberal Democrats, and then there's sort of radical left Democrats.
Where do you put the word progressive? I
have to say, to me, that's always a sort of a funny point, because I think the word progressive is the least well-defined word in American political language.
Yeah.
It locally progressive means I'm smarter than you. I know all the answers or whatever.
And
what does even conservative mean? You know, I mean, progressive once meant something back in the Eugene Debs days, early 20th century.
They used that word. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it meant something, you know. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, it wasn't communist, but it was sort of pushing a lot of those kind of socialist.
I guess it sounds better than socialist or something, but.
The thing is that in America, American.
And I'm somewhat socialist, but I wouldn't,
Well, I mean, I think most modern governments, including the United States, have adopted certain things that might have been thought of as socialist.
Medicare.
Like Social Security and Medicare, whatever, I mean, my personal view about this is that, in an American type of society, what you do is we adopt what we feel we can afford to because we've reached a level of affluence that we can choose to do this. It's not driven just by ideology. It's because
all about the money and about,
we do this? You know, like when Lyndon Johnson was forming the Great Society and expanding a lot of social programs, because it was a period of time where it was felt that we could do this. We could pull this off. But it wasn't sort of driven by sort of, workers of the world unite. We haven't.
The Vista program. Yeah, the Vista program.
Yeah, so we do it because we choose to do these things. Yeah. And it's not the end of the road. I mean, personally, I most definitely do not identify with socialists, but when it comes to healthcare, I very much believe there should have been a so-called public option.
There's got to be. It's horrible. Our healthcare system is really bad.
Listen, if we're all doing it through private health insurance. And employer-based, there's something kind of fundamentally wrong about it.
And you can have a job and not have insurance.
Or what if you're working two or three jobs, but you can't get any health insurance out of any of them?
It's happening all over.
Yeah, so we got to change some of those things, but do it in an American-style solution. We got to find that solution. But with political parties just beating the crap out of each other, it just seems like we're just incapable of coming to any consensus anymore.
I
don't know where the sort of day of reckoning will come in terms of the hardcore left to overthrow the world kind of people and the more liberal Democrats. I mean, in a way, Joe Biden is, people are already forgotten. The thing is a lot of the candidates backed out because they want to make sure Biden would be at the nomination as opposed with Sanders. So there were decisions being made there about how to define the Democratic Party for the here and now.
Why are you just identifying the progressive hardcore and not going to the other side? We also have a movement of white nationalists, whatever you want to call them. They're doing a lot of bad stuff too. So I absolutely agree.
And they're scary as hell.
The difference is they have guns. Not that the other side may not too, but I mean, Antifa, I don't know what that is. I mean, I do know. But I don't think it represents.
All I know is that I've never felt it's more crazy. Comfortable being in the center than I do these days.
I know.
Honestly,
also,
I don't want to.
Also, living
no in, part of any of them.
But living in a state where we have gun control, where we have, I mean, we really don't. We do not. And as much as I have a hard time, even with Cambridge, it is not like some of these parts of the country that it's scary out there. They're not wearing masks. They don't care. I couldn't, I'd have to stay in my house. I'd be afraid to go out. I don't know. I just.
No, it's pretty harsh out there. But but actually, that kind of brings up a topic too, which is speaking nationally again. So we managed to get through the Democratic and Republican national conventions. Right. For whatever they were really like TV shows, well-produced TV shows.
I think the Democrats, as usual, because they have more Hollywood people, they can produce even a better Zoom.
A much better show of it. But
the other one was just a bunch of, it was his family. It was like the Banana Republic on display.
Yeah, and I didn't explicitly watch either of them, but I did. Yeah. I overheard some of it on the TV in the other room. I will confess that much.
I watched
all of
the Democrats, but I could not bear to watch.
I couldn't bear to watch the other one either.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, you know, what I've predicted would be, and I, not just me, I mean, thousands of people predicted this is going to get turned into a rhetoric
law
of
and order and,
law and order, you know,
right.
choice between chaos and you know, and violence and whatever. And it's unfortunate that people, no matter how well-meaning they are kind of playing into that, you know, and so to whatever degree some incident triggers, and for all the best reasons, triggers a reaction, and then there's visuals on the news in every station across the country that suggests the world is falling apart.
What worries me is that I think in some of these places, the police, and I'm not right or wrong, I think like this has happened in Chicago, because of the abuse that they feel they've gotten, that they're backing off and not stopping stuff maybe when they could.
That's true even locally, honestly.
I know, and I think that's unfortunate that it's coming.
It is, no, we're in a bad place in terms of trying to find mutual understanding, you know? And what is it, Elvis Costello, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? It seems like we're having a hard time finding it, you know? But the thing is that, you know, it's, I often think about the Huey Kingfish Long, who's governor of, I think, and also senator from Louisiana.
Yeah.
And he had this phrase, which is only peripherally related to this. He said, power is the perception of power. Right. Now, that was about, you know, if you want to govern something, like, you don't have to actually have power. You just got to make people believe you do. And then you got power. Right? And in a way here, if you actually objectively and quantitatively say how much chaos and violence is in this country right now, the answer is a tiny, tiny little bit.
Yeah.
Right. So the thing, but the thing is when you turn on that TV,
it's all over. It's everywhere. It's on social media. It's everywhere.
That's it.
Facebook. Everyone's recording our lives, and it's just, it's too much. It's ridiculous.
Right. But the thing is that, so is there violence and chaos? I would say no. But is there the perception of chaos and violence? Oh, you bet there is.
Yeah.
And that's a problem because, you know, when people are going to vote come November, are they going to be voting based on rational thought or based on perception and emotion? I think perception and emotion, you know,
it's going to win out. And you know, back in May after George Floyd and that awful thing, but when the whole defund the police came out, and the first time I heard that, I said, that's the worst thing that can happen because that's going to be taken out of context. And this is what's happened.
Yeah, that's right. So I think right now I think I said somewhere, you know, Joe Biden's got to really come up with a real clear statement. You got to take that high ground, you know, and say, we are the people who are opposed to the violence, whatever, you know, not that they was ever really in doubt, but the thing is in terms of grabbing hold of public perception.
Right.
And actually Biden did a pretty good job of that, I think, the other day. But
yesterday did some kind of
So you know, now everybody's gotta kind of ride with that, I think, and do that. And not, and by the way, not just to win an election.
Right.
Because it has to happen. The thing is that, you know, this linger, even if it's only a small thing, but it lingers forever and ever and ever.
Right.
It doesn't get us to any good place. You know, there are solutions to be had. And it's just so much more difficult to actually achieve them in kind of an environment, you know. So that's just got to get correct here. But as I say, it's not real chaos and violence. It's that perception of chaos and violence, and that's the thing that people have to somehow find a way to change. Now, maybe some big event, you know, a meteor will hit or something, or you know.
Well, I don't know. We had a hurricane, and that wasn't helpful.
Yeah, right. But you know,
people are hurting there.
Right, but you know, I think the narrative has to change somewhat here.
I know.
By the way,
we're going to have a break in about 20 seconds, but we can keep talking. But
we'll be continuing here. So we'll talk about baseball or something for those.
Our sponsors, CCTV, but we'll be back. Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So here's our interlude is now. Let's
This is our interlude.
So how about them Red Sox? No.
I'm interested in the Celtics though. They actually beat Toronto the other day, which is Toronto's supposed to be a really good team, the Raptors.
Yeah. But the Bruins are out now.
Yeah, right? That went into I actually turned that on. It was a double overtime. I knew, but it was, you know, they were ahead 3-1, so it would have been an uphill battle, literally.
Yes, absolutely true. Yeah,
but they gave it their all.
You know, a person I know who works for the city over out of the Department of Public Works, turns out he grew up in the same place as I did, and he sent me an obituary for a former New York Yankees shortstop, Horace Clark, who passed away recently. And the thing is, we were kind of
Horace Clark. With him. I mean, how old was he in his 90s?
This was in the lean years of the New York Yankees, back in after 1964 when they failed to win the World Series, and then there was this period of years where the Yankees were like bottom dwellers.
Before Joe Torre.
No, that was the Mets. Right.
Oh, but the thing is that Joe Torre is the Yankees. What are you talking about?
No, he's the manager of the
Mets first.
The Mets. And he used to play, I think, didn't he play with the Braves as a catcher?
But he was definitely the Yankees during the when they won all those.
Oh, games. That's true. That eventually you're absolutely right. I'm crazy. That's
you're it. Crazy. Get at it.
Yeah, yeah. But
they sent you this obituary.
No, just saying is that, you know, I actually lived through this period of years, as the other fellow I was talking about, where we were, you know, followed the Yankees and the Yankees stank. And but then they became great, you know. So there is a familiarity and an acceptance, at least on my part.
With the Red Sox?
Let's go through a year. This is sort of a non-year for baseball anyway. This is like a pretend year.
I mean, let's face it. Alex Cora, everything that happened with him, getting rid of Mookie Betts or whatever happened there. This was definitely not. And then COVID.
Yeah.
Bad year. If you're going to be bad, you might as well be bad this year.
This is basically spring training, and that's it. You know, only it's in summer, right? We'll get through it. So now it's rebuilding time or whatever, and I'll just look forward to the future. So that, you know, isn't that how we always looked at it when you were following a team? It wasn't so great. Wait till next year, right?
Well, yeah.
So I say that, you know, let's wait till next year.
And I'm following the Chicago Cubs, though. They're still doing pretty good.
Yeah, listen, I'm terribly happy that I can even watch baseball games, even if it's
fans. You're right. I think the basketball games are great because I think that whole bubble idea really worked well.
Yeah, yeah. No, so I'm enjoying that.
We're going to go back on in about 10 seconds.
That's right, that's right. But anyway, even the sounds of baseball warms my heart. You know,
I have to just say great.
That. So. Okay. Anyway, so just to be clear about
and
that.
And here we are. We're back, Robert.
All right. So we're back on Cambridge Inside Out.
Yeah.
And by the way, this in case we didn't make it clear, this is September 1st, 2020. So we've actually made it into the meteorological fall, I guess, if not the astronomical fall.
And as I told you before, it's been 5 years we've been doing this show.
I think.
Yes, 2015 September.
are we an institution yet? I don't know. Do you want to be an institution?
I don't know.
Whatever. I don't know. All right. So anyway, so we were talking, you know, a bit about sort of the national stuff, and I sort of just hope we can kind of all as a country get our act together here, and find a way, you know, to sort of change the perception. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you're an American, a good, loyal American like I am, you know, you may not be feeling so happy about the state of affairs for a variety of reasons right now.
Right.
But, you know, we've come through things in the past and we just have to find a way, you know. And I think a new presidency would be a good thing, even if it wasn't for the political reasons. I just think we've got to change
it. We need a change.
This has got to change.
What we have has not been good. I don't
this
care.
This has not been good.
I'm not blaming COVID on him, but every time I hear about the stock market being so great, that has nothing to do with people's realities. Half the people in this country don't have any stock. So that use that as a measurement of doing well. And I have stocks, but I just think that's just awful. You have to look at other things like healthcare and people not being able to afford rents. And
it's the craziest paradox that, in fact, we can talk about businesses shutting down in Central Square and elsewhere and all over the place.
I mean, there's like restaurants.
And, you know, people sort of scraping by on the street.
I know.
Meanwhile, you know, the stock market's about to like break records. I mean, it's kind of making me want to understand.
I like that queuing into that street. I think that's our cue. Streets.
All right. Okay. So let's go down to the local level.
Yes.
All right.
I don't know. Maybe it's because I need an outlet. I just, so many of these proposed streets, who is proposing these?
So the thing is that let me sort of give you my sort of long view of this.
Okay.
Is that, you know, Cambridge has established kind of, you know, maybe it began with the vehicle trip reduction ordinance, but the thing is, there's also a lot of bicycle advocacy that has led to a bicycle plan. Yep. And, you know, I think that in certain respects, every time, you know, you wanted to implement, you know, something like a separated bike lane in, on a certain streets, it ran a risk of some controversy. In a way, right now, having the virus create this sense of emergency has given a kind of an avenue through which you can kind of sort of, on an interim basis, implement certain things that I think some of them are going to be permanent, for better or worse, you know. And there's political pressure to, you know, kind of create shared streets, for better or worse. So I think there's some good reasons and some bad reasons for doing that. But the thing is that it's the political environment we're in right now. And
but
I think...
But it's the vocal few. It's the people that come out and,
it
you
is.
Know.
I'll tell you, too. And the thing is, if people don't see this as political, then they're naive. I mean, right now in my neighborhood, there's flyers on all the lampposts around here saying, come out. We're going to have a walk down Harvard Street. They had one, I think, a few days ago, and they have one tomorrow where we're going to gather here. We're going to show you how important shared streets is. And I looked at that and I said to myself, in other words, you know, to show you how well utilized these are, you have to actually put up flyers all around town to draw a crowd in order to prove how utilized they are, when in fact what that proves is the opposite.
I know.
But, you know, I'm going to say this, that I actually like some aspect of these shared streets. Just say it flat out. I think, you know, and now if you're talking about low volume, as Joe Barr liked to say, these sort of like low volume, low stress streets, some of those streets are sort of, you're like when I grew up on a kid on 19th Avenue and Murray Street. You know, we played stickball.
All right, but let me ask you: are they one way streets? Are they streets that have parking on both sides, or are they one way?
When I was a kid, every street, everything was two ways. When I was a kid, but the thing is that that people didn't drive through like they were thoroughfares. You know.
Okay, so what streets would you say are like that in Cambridge?
You know, Harvard Street is a relatively slow
I agree with
speed.
That. Well, that is already.
Yeah, so that's a shared street.
And they want to extend it,
But I have to say, when I go around Harvard Street, there's like very rarely do you even see people in the street.
I'm not going to be in a street. There's no reason to be in a street. I'm sorry, Robert.
Well,
this cyclists, but if a two-way street, parking on both sides, I have to watch for cyclists and cars to walk there when I can walk on a sidewalk?
You know, I think some people's counter argument to that, which I disagree with, is they say, well, but for some people, they need to step out into the street because they want to maintain social distance.
Bullshit.
I agree. You know?
Wear a mask, even if you're not wearing a mask, it's two seconds of passing somebody.
But I also have to say here, and completely in agreement with you here, that in fact, if this was the height of April, when most of us were like basically running as far away from anybody as possible, right?
Okay, but it is April. It's September.
Right. So now when you have two people walking, both of whom are wearing masks, on a sidewalk 3 feet away from each other, that's fine. And it's safe.
Each other. It's just,
I agree. I agree.
15 minutes of dealing with engaging with somebody.
I agree completely, you know. But on the other hand, I think what we're really seeing is sort of a campaign to reinvent streets.
Get rid of
on one side. Now, part of that is like we're hostile toward motor vehicles.
Robert, I would rather see streets closed at certain times, period. All right, you're going to have people that have to get their cars out, but no traffic otherwise. To me, that is like a closed street, like Memorial Drive.
Right.
That's the only road I have walked in.
Right. Now, I think there are some streets that are kind of connector streets. They're not like 47 blocks long, like Mass Ave or something like that. You know, they're you know, just connector streets.
Magazine Street is very long.
Right. So that's where I'm a little iffy on Magazine Street here. But if you took some of the streets that were interconnecting and just said, we're going to have this be sort of a shared street. And so kids were out there playing basketball out in the street, you know, and cars had to go 10 miles an hour. I think that would be kind of cool.
Okay. But you know what? Howard Street. I don't know if you know where that is. It's right in Riverside.
That's two way.
It's a two-way, and not only is it a two-way, it's a narrow two-way.
So it's a duck and cover street. Yeah.
Exactly. You can't even go down in a car in that. So for that to be a shared street.
No, you would not. That should not be. That absolutely should not be.
Kennard, I think Kennard is a one. No,
yeah, I mean, the way I look at it always is that you got to look at every street pretty much on its own merits and say, is this going to work? Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? But that's just not the way the advocates work. You know, to them, it's a campaign to radically change the world.
They're only going to hear from those people because most people are not. They're not even.
I know.
They don't have the time.
And I've said it about Brattle Street. You know, it's like I didn't like the way they did that two lane. I think there was that could have been a slow street that, you know, would have worked better, I think, that way. But, you know, but if it's not part of the military plan, you know, then you're not going to, you just can't even get the conversation going.
You know, Craig. You know,
and the thing is that if you look around Cambridge and you go over by McGrath Highway, there are some streets which are legitimately dangerous and where the city ought to be aggressively intervening on some of these things. Uh-huh. You know, but you know, instead, you know, we're going to have a big argument about whether let's remove all the parking on Pearl Street. That was a couple of years ago, right?
Oh, right.
You know, or
the bus that goes down Pearl Street.
I know. You know, so I just think we're sometimes having the wrong conversations in this city. You know, on a lot of topics, not just about roads. I think we're locked into this little paradigm that it's about bikes versus cars or this. It's not. It's about sharing. It's about what works well for everybody. And everybody includes everybody, you know, and that includes people with cars too. So
and people keep bringing up like Arlington. If you go to Arlington, they have pretty wide streets and then they have kind of deadish streets. So that's easy to have a shared street.
When they talked about shared streets in Arlington, they talked about in New York City, I broke open the maps and I looked at them. And the streets that they were shutting down in Arlington were like one long block connector that dead ends on a street. It's a street which the only reason you would ever be on that street is because you lived on that street.
I know.
You know, and so those things are perfectly fine to shut down. They're not connected.
And it is getting cooler. And so all this demand for on-street dining, I have not really partaken in that. What's it look like in Inman Square? Because I haven't been around there.
It's not as when they first did it, it seemed to be pretty well utilized, but I don't know about that really.
But
the thing is that, you know, for cars that would be going down Cambridge Street, they now have to divert. Now there's traffic jams on Hampshire Street a lot of the time. Well, you know, I kind of got caught in one myself, and I don't even drive that often anymore, but I got caught in a traffic jam on Hampshire Street.
I mean, if they want to close Harvard Square, cars, although I don't think they can close it to trucks because they're building there, whatever. But that's fine. I think you could make designated areas in the city where you can't drive there. That's fine.
Well, we'll see what happens now with September.
But to have it shared and all this stuff is ridiculous.
I think there's a little more traffic. It's picking up now because it always happens in the fall. And you're going to start seeing some things that are really where the situation may break down. I actually was in Central Square today because they basically say one lane here, one lane there. Well, what happens when a fire engine is coming and you've got a barrier here and you've got barriers there and unless somebody at the head of the line just runs a red light or something to clear it out so the fire engines can get through, the fire engines can't.
What about all the?
And that's on Massachusetts Avenue.
I know, and there's moving trucks now. September 1st.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so I just think that the way this is, it's so driven by advocacy and politics rather than rationality and reason.
An actual study: how many people are actually walking? I mean, if the idea was that you should be walking in the street, I think it's more that you could cycle in the street, which I'm fine with that. I think cyclists, that means you don't have to build so much infrastructure. But I'm not walking in the street. There's no reason to walk in the street. And that's all I'm going to say. Let's go to some photos. Let's go to Starlights. Let's go to something more positive. I'm so tired of dealing with this. I could have walked to New York by the time this, because that's how much I walk 2 miles a day and I don't have a problem.
Yeah. Actually, let me go flip to one little graphic here right now.
All right. And I'll just keep drinking. All right. Go to your graphic. Okay.
All right.
Harvard Square.
So yeah, before we talk a little bit more about shared street, but the thing is that, you know, it was 2 weeks ago, there was a fatality in Harvard Square. And the traffic parking people came back with a proposal, which is to reconfigure Mass Ave, which had two lanes here, and merging with what at the time was two lanes this way here too. And it honestly, as a driver, I always felt there was some ambiguity in the merge when you're heading toward North Mass Ave this way.
Oh, I hate going.
I'm going to make the statement right now that by doing a lane reduction here, which is very good for bicycle safety, whether you put a barrier in or not, as long as there's a better buffer than just a single white line, this is all that was there. The thing is that reducing this just to one lane coming through here, as long as, as long as there's some means of getting out of the way in case there's emergency vehicles, whatever, actually reduces the ambiguity there and may actually make for a better functioning street for bicycles and motor vehicles. So I actually think this is a good plan. You know, again, it's not like I did a detailed study of it. I just think this will work out because in this particular situation, considering the circumstances, I think it works, you know?
All right. You know, it's funny, Robert, I don't ride a bike that much. And I think it was almost over a year ago. I rode through Harvard Square to Porter Square, which I never do. And I was actually surprised that I could do it. So that's me, but maybe because I'm aware of my surroundings.
Let me give you another example without the graphics, but I'll just say it, that.
Yeah.
As a cyclist, actually, I don't bicycle very much anymore, right? But the thing is that I've never felt that riding along North Mass Ave, with two lanes of traffic, a median, and another two lanes of traffic there, feels like I'm riding on the edge of a highway. Whether there's parked cars there or not, it always felt that way. So I would always feel a little, if I was doing that at night, I would feel very bad up there, you know? So you want to target someplace that needs a better treatment. I would say North Mass Ave needs a better treatment because factually it needs it. And it's not symbolic. It just needs it.
No, you're right.
You know, so, but we don't seem to focus on the places that need it. We just do it on what we can get because we got to establish that beachhead. You know, it's part of the campaign, you know. There are places, you know, I understand McGrath O'Brien Highway. This is,
I don't even like going there in a car. So,
fixing up those places, especially when they're by big, nasty intersections, we should do better. We have to do better with that. I mean, honestly, when you look at where almost all of the fatalities or serious injuries have happened, it's always been bad intersections. And, you know, I think that we just need to do a better job of making ambiguous situations less ambiguous.
And people just need to really pay attention.
They really do. Yeah. You know. Now, by the way, I will sort of do a flip of the screen here again for this, and I hopefully this will come up here. I didn't have time to get a proper map of the proposed shared streets, but I'm not going to go through this in detail because it's hopefully boring.
I want to get to Starlight.
It does need to be pointed out here that in addition to Magazine Street, the Garden Street corridor, and Harvard Street, the city is on the edge now of implementing a bunch of other shared streets.
Well, that's interesting. That Bristol Street is a really tiny, short street. I could see that one.
It's a connector.
It's a connector, and it's very short.
Right. So you could use Bristol Street if you want to get.
And I think it's one way, too.
Yes, I think that's true.
I wish they had actually put that on there, whether these were two way or one way. That would
Right. But the thing is, so there's a lot of things that have either in place, have been implemented, things that are proposed.
Right.
Some of them make sense.
Yeah, Donnell Street's another one.
Maybe most of them make sense. But there's an awful lot of them, and superficially, it gives me this sort of perception of this sort of like, well, let's just do this because it'll make the advocates happy, and I don't know if that's really how we ought to be planning.
Yeah,
and let's also see that people say, oh, this is only an interim measure. Really, are you being honest with us, Joe? Really? Are you really?
But wait a minute. Well, they can't have all those signs up when the weather starts getting bad and you have snow clearing. Come on Magazine.
Well, right.
Obstacle course.
And then when spring comes around next year, is it a guarantee that everything will be just put back in place this way? Or what if when the virus, hopefully the day comes when we get out of this nasty tunnel?
I don't know.
You know, how much of this stays. Some of it should stay, I think. But the thing is, yeah. is that, you know, I think we need a little more clarity about it, to be sure.
All right, come on, let's get to something more positive here. Okay. But you know what I mean, less controversial.
Right, right. All right. Well, okay. what is less controversial then?
I know. You know. Let's just go to, because we only have, let's see, we have 10 minutes left. That's a lot of
okay.
time.
Okay, yeah, yeah. All right, so
do you want to bring up?
Yeah, a little bit here. Okay, so so one of the things you were talking about here, pardon my scrolling here, again, one fine example here.
Yeah, that was me on Sunday. That's
of a high yeah. volume.
Yeah.
Look at all the pedestrians crowding in there for their, you know.
No, but actually,
driving for personal safety.
I
know.
That's wonderful. That's the only street. I love that they closed that, and I'm glad they're closing it on Saturdays.
But no, I agree.
It's good, but
I agree.
And that's actually one cyclist. I saw more cyclists than walkers, to tell you.
Yeah, yeah. All right. But actually, let me just because I've got the slide up here, let me just pop this little thing. I don't want to dwell on it or anything. But
no.
One of the things that I'm finding just curious as hell is that, you know, they're going to do this whole realignment of the Mass Pike, mm-hmm. you know, and I think this is something that really impacts Alston more so than Cambridge, but the people in Cambridge somehow have decided that this is a part of Cambridge and they're going to get worked up about it.
Henrietta Davis is on the committee.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, we'll see it. We might hear something. There'll be some diversion of traffic.
Well, Cambridgeport. And
yeah. Yeah. So we'll have some impacts, yeah. But the thing, and it's not shown some, well, I guess sort of in the upper right-hand corner of this picture is a thing called, they call the throat. Right, yeah. It's a narrow place where, in fact, the railroad tracks are under the Mass Pike, which is elevated. So there are various proposals sort of being thrown about now about whether to put everything on the surface, rail on the surface, Storrow Drive on the surface, Mass Pike all on the surface. If you did that, and some of the very well-meaning groups want to do that, I don't know how you do that in such a narrow corridor. But then the other people from the environmental world say, well, you can't do anything out onto the river, right? And I think, well, okay, so you've basically just put in so many constraints that you can't do anything. Now, so the point I'm going to make, and this is probably controversial for some people, is that the boundaries of the Charles River have changed so much over the centuries. Mm-hmm. Right, in fact, especially in this area, this would be the gateway of, when you look sort of off in the distance there by the throat, the gateway toward the Fens, right, where in fact, you know, it was a tidal estuary. The Charles River is a completely artificially constructed channel in some of these pieces anyway. So in my view is that if you need to put something out, you know, widen it out, take a little piece of the river, but maybe give it back elsewhere, find a way to sort of, you know, keep it as a great resource, but do something that actually be really good. I think it's worth trying to find something that's really good, even if it means modifying a little bit of how you interact with the river there. You know, I don't think it's a bad thing. And if you look at some of the great rivers in the world, in Paris, France, and London, you know, they don't have to be sort of, you know, faux natural, which is what mm-hmm. the Charles River is here anyway. Mm-hmm. I think they ought to put a few more options on the table. And I think, you know, so anyway, that's all I want to say about that.
All right. Okay. It's, yeah.
Right?
It's
but, it, but you know, pretty soon, you know, the governor's office, they're going to have to come up with a solution soon.
I know.
But just to say a few things about one of our favorite topics, which is Starlight Square.
Have you been to? I've been to two events there.
I was there for the opening, and then yesterday I happened to be there. It wasn't sort of a regular event, but it was people from MIT and the Volpe people were actually pre-recording it with some of the wonderful people from CCTV. Right. And it was really great. I have to say, it was wonderful to see some of my buddies and pals mm-hmm. who I hadn't seen in ages in the flesh, not just in Zoom, but actually in the flesh. Yep. I honestly, and it was totally by accident. And I was really happy to have stumbled upon it.
So you know? These photos are in they're part of an article by, I don't really.
Yeah, well, this one here is one from me, and then
that's
one I stole. But
that's the Metropolitan.
But then there's this other wonderful article here where,
that's it.
There are some photos taken by somebody named Samara Weiss.
Yeah,
who I believe you may be related to.
I am.
So right. I hear. Whoops. Okay. So anyway, for everybody who doesn't know, this is Judy's daughter, Sammy.
Right. Except for the drone photo. They put her name there.
Right.
Them that it shouldn't be there, but they, whatever.
Yeah. Now, you know, I personally, I look upon Starlight Square as something that was not done to make money for anybody. It wasn't necessarily meant to make businesses necessarily super successful or to be the panacea for the arts. It isn't. But the thing is it's, you know, I often liken it to this movie called Fitzcarraldo. It's a Herzog film. And where you basically just do something mildly insane, but wonderful, you know, because you can, you know, and that's the way I kind of look at this. And so to me, it's a success just because they pulled it off. It's sort of like temporary art in a way too, you know, it's a great thing that way.
No, you know, it's so nice.
Yeah,
and that's the drone photo. Somebody else took that. It shouldn't have.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's but a nice photo to have there.
The performances are down. I went. Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so it's been a great thing, and different times a day, it has different kind of qualities. So, you know, just sort of generally speaking, I think it's just been a wonderful thing to witness and hang out there. And, you know, and for somebody like me who is a somewhat social person, just having place sort of like the square within the square where I go there and I run into people I know.
Yeah.
For me personally, it's been.
And they're having a whole series of different people, performers, all starting tonight, I think.
I think the Central Square Theater has actually been sort of the one who's
each night is featuring
writing herd on a lot of that. And everything's free, by the way. You have to
they do
make
ask
reservations.
Which I really support the artists and the theater, but you do have to make reservations, but there's always open seats. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely true. Yeah, but you know, you want to make reservations because they have to maintain social distancing standards.
They can't have more than, I think last time I was there was about 35 people, and they could probably space more, but
Yeah. Now, just a few things in the time we have left here, just to say that now, this is going to be a pretty pivotal month for a lot of reasons, I think. Schools are reopening, all right?
Somehow. I haven't really followed that. It's so complex.
I haven't followed it super closely, but parents sure as heck have been following it really closely.
There's some big meetings this week, too. I think you have them listed.
Yeah, and on my block where there are preschools, there's a rock and roll daycare and there are Montessori schools.
Are they open?
Yeah, they're open. You know, and you know, they had all the windows wide open today. They were welcoming people, so I waved them, you know, it was great.
Did you see the little kids in masks?
I see them, because for the
Isn't
rock and roll daycare.
That's the saddest thing you've ever seen. When I see a little kid in a mask, I'm sorry.
You know, but the thing is that one day those kids will be adolescents and adults, and they will talk about that year when we all had to wear masks. It'll be a thing.
Unless they're always going to be wearing masks.
I don't think so.
I don't know. This is not the last pandemic.
Right. But I think, you know, I don't envy a lot of the parents and the difficult decisions they're making right now. One of the decisions some people are making is, and I've seen this in social media and elsewhere, is they're so iffy about the public schools, whether it's should you go back, that they're forming these things they're called learning pods.
I know. If
you have money or the wherewithal, because it might not be necessarily expensive, but the thing is, and though I think it will be, but the thing is you have to be kind of a very intervention-oriented parent to do it. And a lot of parents...
Plus, you have to have a job where you're working at home, where you can make your own hours.
Exactly. You know, so there's so much redefinition about how you work, what you do with your kids, that whole daycare question, or how to handle the kids.
I'm getting more depressed the more you speak. So
it's hard. it's seriously hard.
But okay.
Yeah.
No. I was going to say, by the time we meet next time, it'll be right after the first council meeting of the session of this.
That's session. Right. So the next city council meeting will be on September 14th.
And we meet on the 15th. Yeah.
But you know, just for good news, the thing is that the wide scale testing for coronavirus at the local universities, Harvard and MIT, apparently, if I read this news appropriately, are showing remarkably low numbers in terms of
And continued testing, which is great.
And continued testing. So the fear that the students will come and the world will fall apart, maybe that's not going to happen. So that's an upbeat.
Yay. We'll end on that. I think we already ended, but that's all right.
All right. So this CCTV part is over then. Okay. But anyway. Where did you see that?
I just saw it on
some sort of social media
really?
Today.
Okay.
Yeah. A couple of things.
Yeah.
Again, just as for the post-production version here.
Yeah.
I have some questions about when will the library reopen? For real, not just for takeout.
Yes, so far.
There are people I know, including me now, I guess, who are older people. When is the senior center open to? So anyway, let's wind it down, and we'll see you later on Cambridge Inside Out.
All right. Bye.